At the 2024 SPIE Advanced Lithography and Patterning Symposium, Ann Kelleher, a top Intel manufacturing executive, mentioned something called Directed Self-Assembly, or DSA. In that presentation, she called DSA a key innovation for cost-effective scaling, and said it had to be brought to high-volume manufacturing. Intel later presented results of a DSA workflow that can quote-unquote heal errors in UV lithography, potentially cutting costs by a dramatic amount. But what is DSA? DSA has been around for over 30 years. It was once positioned to be a replacement for photolithography, but now is seen as a complement to it. But will the fabs adopt it? In today's video, a bottoms-up way to pattern the ever-shrinking lines of our semiconductors, directed self-assembly, or DSA. Self-assembly is where materials spontaneously organize themselves into more complex shapes and structures. The self-assembling behavior is the result of information encoded in individual molecules and atoms, plus natural non-covalent forces like electrostatic forces, van der Waal forces, or the hydrophobic effect. I'm somehow reminded of economics, except it's not humans interacting with each other, but very small, non-sentient particles. The key thing is that the final arrangement is thermodynamically favored. It minimizes the system's total free energy and is thus more stable. The purest form of self-assembly does not involve any external force, energy, or applied field. But oftentimes, we need to guide along the process to get what we want quickly and consistently, ergo, directed self-assembly. There are three generally accepted ways to do this direction. 1. We can design the building block materials' encoded behavior for the desired result. 2. We can prepare a template to direct the behavior. Self-assembly requires the components to move freely, but we can use patterned substrates or the like to guide that movement, like how traffic barriers redirect car flow. 3. We can apply a form of external energy to either induce, guide, or accelerate the interactions between the building blocks. This can be an electromagnetic field or simple thermal energy. DSA for semiconductor processes will utilize all three of these directing principles. At first, this might sound super weird, like as if your IKEA furniture spontaneously put itself together inside its box. But self-assembly is a key organizing principle in the natural world. A nice example are these compound molecules called amphiphiles. They have components with two natures, one water-loving and one water-hating. In high enough concentrations in water, they will self-assemble into spherical or cylindrical structures called micelles. This is due to the hydrophobic effect. Micelles have their hydrophilic components facing outwards towards the water, while the hydrophobic ones go inside. Note how the particles need to be allowed to move in relation with each other. This is the working principle behind how detergent or soap cleans you. The micelles encapsulate oils and dirt inside their hydrophobic core, letting things to be washed away. Self-assembly is also abundant in biology, where it helps produce the lipid bilayers so essential to life. They also have applications to drug delivery systems, since they can protect a drug from negative conditions. If we go over to the geologic world, opals are beautiful end products of self-assembly. They're colloidal crystals formed from self-assembled arrays of what we call colloidal particles packed together under moderate compression. And in case you're wondering, as I was, colloidal particles is a fancy name to describe micrometer-sized small objects suspended in a medium like a solid or a liquid. In the case of opals, those objects are silica spheres. The most closely studied DSA building blocks are these unique compound molecules called block copolymers, or BCPs. The phrase copolymer describes a macromolecule made up of at least two different smaller molecules called monomers. The monomers are attached together like links in a chain. If the chain link sequence is random, red, blue, blue, red, blue, red, red, whatever, then this is what we call a random or statistical copolymer. If the chain link sequence is consistently alternating, like as in blue, red, blue, red, then the result is an alternating copolymer. And now, if the chain link sequence has repeating segments like blue, blue, blue to red, red, red to blue, 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 then each repeating segment becomes a block. When at least two blocks are covalently bonded together, you get a block copolymer. Or, shall I say, a blockchain? The simplest possible BCP is a diblock copolymer, which is made from just two blocks. But there are more complicated BCPs out there with the blocks arranged in linear chains or star-like arrangements. BCPs are so special because of their internal tension. The block components are dissimilar. In fact, they literally repulse each other, like oil and water. The force of that repulsion is measured using a metric called the Flory-Huggins interaction parameter, which sounds like a brand of diapers. It is represented by the Greek letter chi. The blocks' repulsion pushes them to minimize their direct interaction, like as if there were two roommates who hate each other. However, the blocks' strong covalent bonds restrain their separation to only a few nanometers. We can use this internal tension to produce complicated patterns. The process begins with spin coating a layer of BCP in a disordered or disassembled state onto a substrate. We kick off the self-assembly with a process called annealing. With annealing, we provide energy to the BCPs either through heat or chemical solvent means. The BCPs then try to separate the best way they can whilst being chained together, eventually settling on an equilibrium structure. Going back to the roommates who hate each other scenario, a familiar one for me, it is like as if they split the room between themselves and now sit opposite across from each other. We call this process microphase separation, and it is the heart of DSA. If done right, what results is an ordered structure of well-defined, precise lines, spaces, and dots. Typically, to complete the self-assembly process, one of the blocks is removed, leaving behind the desired pattern. The resolution, or smallest possible size, of the repeating final patterns is determined by the blocks' size and their aforementioned Flory-Huggins interaction parameter, the diaper number. The higher the repulsion, the better the resolution. The contrast with traditional photolithography is fascinating. Photolithography is about taking a block of material and carving away the unwanted portions. For that reason, you can call it a top-down method. The pattern is imposed literally from above. DSA, on the other hand, builds up structures from the ground up, using information programmed into each block. The pattern emerges out of the material itself. BCPs were first demonstrated in 1995 at IBM, and the goal was to outright replace the photolithography process itself. A team led by Mansky annealed a diblock copolymer, the simplest type of BCP with just two blocks. The end result was an ordered pattern of tiny spherical blobs arranged in a hexagonal grid. Pretty rad. 2 years later, in 1997, they tuned the process by adding what they called a brush, or what we now call a neutral layer. During the self-assembly process, BCP blocks might stick to a silicon substrate due to certain material biases. A neutral layer fixes this by acting kind of like the ice for ice skaters, allowing the components more freedom of movement. Mansky's clever trick was to use a random copolymer version of the same block copolymer they were self-assembling. This allowed the team to create 3D structures, layered stripes, or tiny vertical cylinders. That same year, a team at Princeton, led by Miri Park, used diblock copolymers to transfer pattern arrays of regularly spaced dots onto a substrate of silicon nitride. They then used a well-known etch technique called reactive ion etching to pattern 20 nanometer wide dots onto that substrate. This process flow is reminiscent of photolithography, which is why they named this all block copolymer lithography. Such structures can be useful for certain nanoscale features for things like DRAM. One major next-generation DRAM cell structure uses trench capacitors, which are these deep trenches dug into the substrate. They argued that self-assembly would work faster and cheaper than other methods like deep trench etching. Other suggestions include quantum dots or the magnetic bits that high-density hard disk drives use to store data. IBM made other nano-sized objects for non-volatile semiconductor memories. In 2003, they used directed self-assembly to fabricate something called a nanocrystal memory cell. These are like traditional flash memories, but instead of using a single conventional film, they use discrete, isolated particles called nanocrystals made using chemical vapor deposition. The IBM team used self-assembly to create a filter to standardize the size of the nanocrystals. And then in 2005, another IBM team used self-assembly to help produce the nanowire channels for a nanowire transistor. Such wires were just 15 nanometers wide. This motivated some advocates in the 2000s to argue that directed self-assembly can be the future. In their argument, it can deliver resolution metrics on par with EUV, but without the associated eye-popping financial and technological costs. However, questions remained. Defects were and remain a major problem. While it is true that the DSAs want to achieve the thermodynamic ideal, they might not always get there, which leaves defects. Reasons for such might include impure substrates, external particles, or an insufficient annealing. But the most significant question concerned a lack of top-down guidance. At a local level, you can get these impressive nanometer-sized structures, but at a macro level, without guidance, the patterns lose their coherence. You get these patterns that look like a fingerprint, aesthetically pleasing, no doubt, but not useful. To deal with these issues, methods known as guiding patterns have emerged. Two major guiding patterns are chemoepitaxy and graphoepitaxy. In graphoepitaxy, we use traditional lithography to pre-pattern the substrate with physical or topographical grooves. We then apply the BCP layer between the grooves, then we self-assemble to create tight lines or other structures. Chemoepitaxy runs on similar principles, except that it uses chemical rather than topographical patterns. We first apply a chemical, and that chemical can either repel or attract the blocks in the BCP during self-assembly, almost like painting lines in a hallway. The graphoepitaxy process seems to be simpler, while also delivering tighter lines, but chemoepitaxy seems to offer fewer defects. In the readings I did, there does not seem to be widespread consensus for one over the other. By the mid-2000s, it had become clear, however, that only photolithography can meet all the extreme demands, particularly with defectivity, that semiconductor manufacturers require. So researchers transitioned from developing DSA as a lithography alternative to it being a complement via density enhancement. The idea is that the designs are getting ever tighter per Moore's law, but photolithography light dimensions hit 193 nanometers with ARF in early 2000s and have stalled there ever since. But with EUV then struggling, fabs have been forced to adopt multi-patterning, where they create multiple lower density masks and superimpose those masks on top of one another. The simplest form of multi-patterning is double patterning, but there are other more complicated process flows. Nonetheless, they're all very complex and require incredible alignment, and mistakes can easily hurt yield. Fabs in general are loath to multi-pattern. So the pitch is that DSA can be a fast and low-cost chemical method to cheaply improve the resolution. Traditional lithography first lays down the guide patterns onto the substrate. A layer of BCP is then spin-coated on top and annealed to produce a 2 to 3 times denser pattern. This gives us a very tight and dense regularly repeating pattern that would otherwise require expensive multi-patterning at the cost of giving up a little flexibility. But will fabs adopt it over other solutions on the market? Starting in 2011, we started to get the first semiconductor equipment ecosystem consortiums, trying to build new tools and flows that fabs can use. Notable members included IBM, who did a lot of pioneering work, the Japanese equipment maker Tokyo Electron, the Belgian research institute IMEC, and the French research institute CEA Leti. The fervor for DSA seemed to crest in the early to mid-2010s, when skepticism over EUV's effectiveness reached a nadir. In 2015, IMEC, Tokyo Electron, and Merck announced a potential breakthrough, a DSA solution suitable for the 7-nanometer node. It produces an array of hexagonal holes about 45 nanometers wide with relatively few defects. Advocates acknowledged that defect rates still needed to decline, but that DSA could cut down on the need for one or two extra masks for producing contacts or vias. If that gets adopted, then other processes can too, thus kickstarting an entire ecosystem. The fabs did seem to have given DSA a spin in their R&D labs, but ended up going with multi-patterning for 7 nanometers. In a 2016 retrospective, Mark Lapidus of Semiconductor Engineering reflected on the situation. He noted that DSA had not made fast enough progress in its biggest problem, high defect rates, as well as roughness in the pattern. There were also outstanding questions about how to integrate the process into existing flows. Then in 2013 and 2014, ASML made a major breakthrough in light source power. EUV then started to make rapid progress towards high volume manufacturing, and the knowledge that EUV was on the way, as well as the billions of dollars already invested in its ecosystem, sapped whatever momentum that DSA had for density enhancement. So EUV might have sapped DSA's first major coming out in the mid-2010s, but what EUV taketh away, it also giveth, and it has giveth DSA a new reason for being, stochastic variations. The dominant photoresist used today for EUV is the chemically amplified resist, or CAR. When a EUV photon hits the resist, it activates a chain reaction of chemicals that expand outwards. These are workhorses, but EUV lithography presents a special challenge for them. They do not absorb EUV photons all that well, which sucks because dosages are already so low, and being compounds, their absorption sensitivity is randomly distributed. This all means we get random variations that can cause roughness in the lines, especially at their edges. These resolve into defects like unwanted line gaps or bridges between neighboring lines. Scaling down pattern sizes also creates new damages. As pitches reach the low 20-nanometer range and beyond, we start experiencing pattern collapse, a major cause of defects. IMEC and Intel have proposed the use of DSA to potentially rectify these delicate patterns. After EUV exposure, a layer of BCPs is then added on top. Self-assembly is then activated with a 30-minute thermal annealing. The BCPs self-assemble over the underlying guiding pattern, fixing the pattern's roughness and preventing defects. IMEC, working in concert with several South Korean universities, suggests that this post-exposure rectification technique can possibly allow fabs to lower their EUV doses by up to 60% for a 28-nanometer pitch design. It should also be noted that Intel has presented similar results in their own work, too. Smaller EUV doses mean less power and money spent. If it works, then that is music to fabs' ears. Intel also sees DSA as being key to upcoming high-NA EUV machines, whose thin depth of focuses mean thin resist layers that risk collapse. DSA can help heal those as well. Pitch flexibility remains an issue. Defects, too. But Intel recently reported that they believe they can cut down the frequency of two major defect categories by fine-tuning the dry etch and better filtering out external particles. In a famous 1959 speech, the physicist Richard Feynman shared a vision of billions of tiny factories, miniature manufacturing systems capable of making items with previously impossible precision. Feynman took it all the way down to the atomic level with nanomachines producing things atom by atom. Scientists like Eric Drexler have since argued the societal risks associated with such assemblers and that they need to be regulated. Now, DSA is pretty far away from those wild dreams, but the technology looks pretty compelling in semiconductors. And as a crude, bottoms-up tech, if it works, it might be considered the first step on a long path towards true nano-manufacturing, like what Feynman called out so many years ago. Alright everyone, that's it for tonight. Thanks for watching. Subscribe to the channel, sign up for the Patreon, and I'll see you guys next time.